everybody. I'm V. Jemine, a.k.a. The Terrible Australian, and welcome to the latest episode of Super Podcast. And with me, as always, is my co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hi, I'm suffering an ear infection that I've had for the month of April. I can't even remember what month it is. But other than that, I'm fantastic.
Oh, I hope you get better soon, Marcy.
I hope so.
It sucks having an ear infection.
Yeah, it does, which is why it has been so long between podcasts, because I've been sick, as usual, because that's my MO.
Hopefully you get better soon, Marcy. I'm actually sick myself at the moment as well, so, but definitely not as bad as what you're suffering at the moment, though.
That's right.
I shouldn't complain.
Well, hope you get better soon, too.
But to be fair, Marcy, I am a bit of a pussy, so there you
go. Yeah, you are.
I cry when I rip a Band-Aid off my skin. That's how much of a pussy I am.
You do.
Indeed.
All right, you introduce our guest, because I have someone at the door.
Also, for this very special episode, we have a very special guest. And the last time he was on is when we did which episode was it? Oh, yeah, the Oscar special, but he was part of a very special segment on that episode, and that, of course, is Mr. Dan McIntosh. How you going, Dan?
Yo, Ben, how's it going, mate?
Oh, not too bad. How you going?
Yeah, getting there slowly but surely, but it's the only way to do it, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I hope you're not as sick as both Marcy and myself are.
No, I'm actually in 100% A-OK health.
Yeah, no, I'm very jealous of you right about now.
That's all right. I'll carry the team. I'm used to it.
Indeed, indeed. But, yeah, we'll probably...
Is it awkward?
It is awkward because, like, you're not... I'm waiting for you to... We do our usual segment, but you're not here.
Oh, okay. I'm back. I just got a care package from Madman. So there will be more things to review coming soon. Alrighty. So have you introduced our guest?
Every guy is a guest as well.
Oh, not really. So I guess Daniel's been introduced.
Of course.
Awesome. So, B, why are you a terrible Australian for this podcast?
Marcy, I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen The Host.
Why?
Because it was a curiosity, man.
Yeah, I can understand if you went to see the Korean movie The Host. But...
Well, to be fair, I'm also a fan of Saoirse Ronan, so I got to give her, like, bit of love because she's an awesome actress.
Well,
but yeah,
I like her too, but I don't think I could stomach The Host.
I will say this, Marty, it is better than the entirety of the Twilight series, even though that's not really saying much.
Yeah, that's not saying much. Well, yeah. Bede, you continue
it
your terrible.
It's like, okay, it actually is pretty decent, but yeah, it gets bogged down in, you know, crappy dialogue and just a really bad love triangle.
So it's a Stephanie Meyer isms.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so, I may see it just out of morbid curiosity, but yeah. No,
I will say this, it definitely has one of the most hilarious voiceovers of all time.
Really?
Yeah, because like in the movie, Saoirse Ronan plays a young girl who dies, and her body is taken over by an alien.
what?
as it usually does. But the thing is, though, she's not real. Her human self isn't really technically dead, so she has like this hilarious kind of back between her with her the alien that's taken over her body, and also her human self. Like, you can hear, like, her voiceover and all that, and it's pretty hilariously bad. And no kidding, like, people around me were, like, giggling, laughing every time it happened.
The voiceover cannot be anywhere near as good as Chuck Norris's in The Octagon, though.
I don't know. It could almost be as epic as that.
That wasn't voiceover. That was him suffering schizophrenia, which would explain the entire movie.
Manifesting itself as a voiceover when his lips aren't moving.
Yes, he was hearing voices in his head.
Yeah. AJ, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is pretty hilarious. In the movie, I would say, like, if you are curious in kind of, sort of, in a way, want to see how bad it is, I'd say it's worth checking out just to see the hilarious bad voiceover.
Right.
Even Saoirse Ronan, as brilliant as an actress as she is, cannot make that voiceover acting any good.
Yeah. I don't think Daniel knows who she is by her name, but she's the actress that was in Hannah.
Yeah, and also Atonement and other really good movies as well.
Yeah, but we actually went and saw, I think it was, who went and saw Hannah? A few of us went and saw Hannah anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And she's also in that movie, by the way, so.
Yeah, I want that on Blu-ray, but that's... That we should have that for our what I want on Blu-ray discussion.
Exactly.
Yes, but we are not here to talk about how bad Stephanie Meyer is, although that is fun. We are here to talk about Iron Man 3, which is the first movie in Marvel's Phase 2. And we're going to start off and have a good discussion about it, but it will be spoiler-free. So if you haven't seen it, we are not going to spoil it for you. But for those of you that want spoilers, we are going to have a spoiler-filled segment afterwards. So, yes. We're going to cater to those that don't want spoilers first. So I went and saw Iron Man 3 on Thursday with my mum, because it's tradition for my mum and I to go see an Iron Man movie. It's her Mother's Day present, even though it's a little bit early, for our Mother's Day is the second Sunday in May. And yeah, we both had a really good time. Mum actually thinks it's the best one of the three. I would say I like it, I thought it was better than part two, but I don't think it's quite as good as part one was, but I think it's a damn fantastic movie. What about you, Bede?
I think I have to agree with your mum, Marcy. I actually think it's the best of the three, to be honest. I think this one has the sort of the more stronger script as well, because when you have like Shane Black writing and directing your movie, of course you're going to have like a great script to go along with it, and I think it's definitely the best scripted film of the series, but also it's also strong in a lot of ways as well. It has a great momentum. It has this great action sequences and also some hilarious moments too. So it's not an entirely like dark affair. It actually has a lot of comedy in it and some great character work as well. And I think everyone in the film, from Robert Downey Jr. to Gwyneth Paltrow and Don Cheadle, they actually give their best performances in the entire series in this film. And it's just hugely entertaining. I've already seen it 3 times now, and I just enjoy it even more so on every watch.
It hasn't been out a week, and you've seen it 3 times. You are crazy.
Well, I saw it on opening day, because, you know, this is one of those movies you had to see it on opening day. And then I went back and saw it the following day, because there was a little... I was just nudging to go see it again. And then on Sunday, my brother wanted to go see it, so we went to go check it out at the in IMAX 3D.
So anyone that says that, because I went and saw, like, The Dark Knight Rises 3 times in, like, 4 days or whatever it was, they can go to hell, because you're just as bad as me.
Well, to be fair, I had to pay at least two of those 3 times. So.
But I think our guest might have some differing opinions on the movie. So, Daniel, why don't you let us know what you thought of Iron Man 3 without spoilers?
Well, I was really surprised to find out that Darth Vader was Tony Stark's father. Oh my God. Like, really?
Yeah, who knew? I mean...
I'm totally shocked, man.
No, look, I thought Iron Man 3 was a good movie. I just didn't think it was a great movie. I think it was on par with Iron Man 2, maybe a bit better. Iron Man 1 is still, I think, the definitive Iron Man movie as far as I'm concerned in terms of being true to the character and being true to the comic book source material. Shane Black, I can't argue with the guy. The guy's got talent. He did do Lethal Weapon movies, which were, like, really, you know, some of my all-time favourite movies. As far as the comedy went in the movie, I think he just pushed it too much. Like, when I was watching it, I was kind of like, really? Just, are you pushing it that much? It just kind of started feeling like it was getting campy rather than funny. So, look, I think they could have dialed back the comedy a bit in it. That's just my opinion. The action was fantastic. I have to agree with Bede's comments in that in terms of the performances of the actors, this is probably one of the best that I've seen. Certainly, we saw more dynamic range from each of the actors. I think especially in Gwyneth's case, I think she had a lot more dynamic range to her character in the third one than any of the other ones. So, yeah, I definitely have to agree with Bede there. It was enjoyable. I thought it could have probably been edited and cut down a little bit. I thought it was bordering on a little bit too long. It's still really an enjoyable movie. I'd definitely be adding it to the collection. But I'm actually curious to know, B, do you see any difference between the IMAX 3D version and the regular cinema 3D version?
Well, I never saw the first two times I watched it, I didn't watch it. I only watched the 2D version the first two times. With the IMAX one, the IMAX I went to, this wasn't like the huge one where we went to see The Dark Knight Rises. This was like a bit of a small one up at sort of High Point.
He went to Knife Point! I mean, what?
Knife Point.
That's our old cinema stomping grounds.
Knife Point and Maribyrnong.
But, the 3D is pretty solid. I wouldn't say it's amazing, but it was solid, but definitely, especially during the action scene, but it's definitely a film you don't really need to see in 3D.
No.
I don't think, because it's it doesn't really, the film doesn't really utilize the 3D that much. I think it was just mainly just an afterthought more than anything. Not to say the 3D was bad, because if it was post-converted 3D, post-converted 3D has definitely gotten a lot better in the last 2 years. Like, you only have to see Jurassic Park 3D just to see how just amazing it can be. But other than that, it's solid, but I wouldn't say, check out. But I wouldn't rush out to see the 3D version. I probably would just stick to the 2D version, to be honest.
Yeah,
okay, this is where I'm going to wait. I've got a personal gripe time. I hate all this up-converted 3D stuff. It's not good. And I've sort of been sitting down watching 3D movies that have been shot deliberately in 3D, like Avatar, versus up-converted stuff. And the reason why the up-converted stuff does not look as good is because your shot selection is completely different when you film in 3D. And those are the words of James Cameron. When you're using 3D camera technology, you have to change your shot selection and you have to change your sequences, your action sequences, to suit the 3D filming technology. And that's why up-converted 3D films just aren't as good as 3D films that are filmed
with
3D technology.
They haven't been. I think one of the best, actually, like, converted 3D movies I've seen was actually Titanic, because I kind of trust James Cameron in what he's doing. I've sort of gotten used to 3D over the past few years, and I don't get, like, really bad headaches as I used to, but I think because I have my ear infection and stuff, I got a massive migraine as soon as I walked out of the movies. The 3D actually just really hurt. I didn't think it was necessary at all. Some things looked really nice, but other things, I mean, it's not necessary. It doesn't add anything to the story. It doesn't add anything to the experience. It's such a gimmick. that I didn't need it there. So that's my 3D rant.
Well, I think it depends. Like, 3D, I think, can be used in two different ways. You can even be as, you know, the standard, you know, throwing shit at you from while watching it, or it can be more of an immersive experience. That's why I sort of brought up Jurassic Park 3D before, because it actually has that sort of combination of both those elements, and actually really surprised me in how the 3D worked in that movie. It's almost as if 20 years ago Steven Spielberg kind of knew this movie was going to be made in 3D, and he kind of shot it in ways where it actually felt, where certain shots and all that actually looked fantastic in 3D. But enough about Jurassic Park 3D, even though that's awesome. Back to Iron Man.
Yeah, I might actually just put in what I liked about it. I do think it's probably the best Iron Man performance from Robert Downey Jr., because I think there's actually just so much more that we get to see with Tony Stark. He is really suffering from what happened at the end of the Avengers. So I think there's like an added layer to his character that we haven't seen before. But by now, he's played Iron Man, you know, this is fourth time. So he's right at home with that character. No one else, I think, could play him. He's perfect. It was what he was meant to do with his life. I also think, you know, I think Pepper Potts has given Gwyneth Paltrow, like, her best role for a very long time. She's just perfectly cast, and their chemistry is so good that I want to see them in a really well done romantic comedy, because that would be awesome, and I don't like romantic comedies. But I think they really expanded on her character as well. We can see, you know, how she is now that she's actually in a relationship with him and the changes. I think that was really well done, and yeah, we even get further development with James Rhodes, played by Don Cheadle, who I actually quite prefer a lot more than Terrence Howard. And I'm not knocking Terrence Howard, because I think he's a great actor. I just don't think the role suits him as well as it does Cheadle. And I think there's just a much better and more interesting chemistry between Cheadle and Robert Downey Jr. that they definitely have a really epic bromance going. But yeah, I mean, all of that stuff really worked. I think the script really tapped into a lot of, you know, character development. It did bring out these characters a bit more. I know that Daniel said he had issues with the comedy, but I actually just thought it flowed and was there really well and just naturally. And if you look at the Avengers, that movie is constantly funny. So I don't think, I mean, I think that I like how Marvel are not going like full crazy dark, that they have that lighter stuff to it, which I really liked. And it has some awesome action. It's so exciting. And we're not going into spoilers yet, but I thought that Guy Pearce and Ben Kingsley and James Vajdale were really awesome in their roles, and I like what they brought to the film. Yes.
Cool.
There's a bit of a silence there. I was like, oh, we're listening to Marcy talk. It's awesome.
Indeed. I'm in total awe.
Yes, everyone should be.
But I do agree, though. I agree with everything you said.
So. Good. Yes. I think if I have issues with it, they're very minor. I do think it might be just a touch too long. And there's just a few continuity things that we can get into shortly that I just sort of were like, yeah, you know, that just doesn't make much sense. But yeah, it's so minor that I just almost ignore it because I had such a good time. And yeah, I am looking forward to seeing it again. And I did rewatch Iron Man 2 and The Avengers. And it certainly just feels right at home with with those movies. I think Daniel wanted to say something.
I think, in terms of definitely getting Don Cheadle in the role of Rhodes was an awesome step. I really enjoyed Terrence Howard's performance in the first Iron Man movie. I thought he was great. And that the only thing is, like, when looking at Iron Man 2 and 3, I can't visualize Terrence in that action role wearing the War Machine armor and, you know, standing side by side with Tony Stark. I think Don just absolutely nails it, which is good to see. That's pretty much all I had to say on that.
Okay. Should we venture into spoiler territory? And for those listening, if you don't want to know, please turn off the podcast because the rest of the podcast is going to be spoilers. So, spoiler alert! Okay. B, do you want to get into the spoilers?
Indeed. I'll bring up one spoiler, and I think this is the one that I think anyone who had seen the movie would want us to talk about. And the thing is, I was completely caught off guard, and I think anyone who has seen this movie was completely caught off guard by this, and it's probably, without a doubt, the most shocking twist I have seen in a movie in quite a while. And the twist is, you find out that the Mandarin, the big evil bad guy, who Tony is hunting down to revenge against, you find out that the Mandarin is actually not a real person, and in fact, he's just an actor being used by guys.
That was actually rumored on the internet, like, right almost at the start of production of that movie. Everyone was saying, oh, you know, they're doing like in Batman Begins, and that where, you know, Ken Watanabe wasn't really actually Ra's al Ghul, was actually, you know, just this figurehead and that, and it was just, and that, so it was interesting that was spot on with that.
I don't know, I've never actually heard that rumor, but
no,
I
didn't either.
But I think in Iron Man, like, I can definitely see the Batman Begins comparisons, because Batman Begins, they both kind of do the similar thing, but I think it was a bit more obvious in Batman Begins, and it's a bit more surprising in Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, because I wasn't, like, completely surprised in Batman Begins, because I kind of had a feeling about it, but this I just had no idea. And when it happens, I was just like, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, well, it makes sense why Guy Pearce is actually in the movie. And it's funny because they really, like, downplayed his character. Like, they really didn't say much about it. They didn't really say, like, what he was going to be, or at least I didn't read that. So, yeah, I think it was kind of clever.
I mean, it's the other way because, like, as soon as, like, I saw it and then I saw the level of comedy and I saw Guy Pearce's character, okay, at the start, you know, he was disgruntled, he got stood up by Tony Stark. I'm like, yeah, they're going to make a joke out of this. This is, like, Ben Kingsley is not the Mandarin, or he's, like, he's going to be some puppet thing. And I knew it straight away. It's like, okay, this is not it. It's like, you can show me all this terrorist crap and whatever. It's like, woo, look over here. This, you know, it was just so obvious compared to Batman Begins. But that was just my opinion. That's the way I saw it.
I don't know, I think it didn't really, like I said, it was a total surprise for me because in the books, the Mandarin is the leader of the Ten Rings, which is the, and the Ten Rings were actually a big part of the first movie because those were the people who kidnapped Tony Stark, and I just assume, oh, this is them taking revenge on Tony once again, or just doing more, or even more terrorist acts. And it kind of surprised me that that, because, like, the marketing of this movie is actually pretty amazing, because they did the movie, the trailers, marketing and all that, it does not give away that fact. They just build up the fact that the Mandarin is probably this huge big baddie, and and like he's going to be like a huge, like if not the probably the biggest villain that the Marvel universe has had so far. And then also you got Guy Pearce, who has been in trailers and all that, but he's been very downplayed a lot in the marketing as well. So it was just really surprising that this twist just comes out of nowhere.
I mean, I was expecting Guy Pearce to be working with the Mandarin. Like, that was what I was like, okay, he's like working with him, and obviously he wants to get revenge for what happened.
Yeah, that's what I assumed too.
But then it's like, as soon as we sort of see the scene and they find Ben Kingsley, he's just like, wait, that's not right. And then he's like, yeah, I'm an actor. The Mandarin's not real. And I was like, wait, what just happened? Thought it was really good. It was funny because I think Mom and I sort of were looking at each other going, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And it was nice to be surprised because everything gets spoiled these days.
Yeah, especially, like, even though on a plot front, Iron Man 3, you know, pretty much has, you know, the standard kind of superhero story, but it actually has so many things that happen within that plot that actually surprise you and offers up some things you don't expect to be in a movie like this.
Mm.
And it kind of sort of changes the game a little bit for how the next Phase 2 films are going to be. Because, like, and I actually give the credit for Shane Black to doing something that's totally different and kind of spins the comic book movie on its head a little bit, and even doing it at the risk of, you know, some fanboys being pissed off, because the Mandarin, like, I haven't really read the Iron Man comic books, but from what I understand, the Mandarin to Iron Man is what the Joker is to Batman, or Lex Luthor is to Superman. He's like his main arch nemesis, and I can understand that it's definitely going to divide people. People are either going to love it or hate it as well.
Yeah, but you know what? Fanboys need to take a massive chill pill from time to time, and they're like saying this is the worst movie ever made because of that twist. I'm like, get a fucking life, you loser. Okay, that's a bit harsh, but really, I mean, calm the fuck down.
It's interesting with the way they went with the character, because obviously Iron Man started off in the Silver Age of comics in the 1960s, and of course during the 1960s you had the Vietnam War, and of course the origin story of Iron Man and Tony Stark has sort of changed through the ages. I think in the 60s he was a Vietnam War guy, and he got the shrapnel through Vietnam, and the Mandarin was actually one of the Viet Cong, or leader of Viet Cong or something like that. So I think that was the origin of the Mandarin. It was kind of like this in the comic books. It's kind of like a Fu Manchu type evil Asian villain, sort of stereotyped. And obviously now, you know, we don't do Mr. Wong and his laundry type movies and try and, you know, stereotype and send up Asian culture anymore. I thought it was interesting that, you know, they gave him, like, he was portrayed as sort of like a Middle Eastern, sort of Kazakhstan type terrorist, but they still went with the whole Asian Mandarin title for the villain, and the only thing really Asian was really the clothing that he wore and some of the sort of set props and that. So I thought it was interesting in that they still went with this whole Mandarin villain, but they didn't really explain, you know, why he was called the Mandarin. And that, I mean, I could understand if he was actually Asian, they got an Asian actor to play it, and that, but getting, like, you know, Ben Kingsley to play the Mandarin, it just kind of really didn't make sense anymore. So, I don't know, maybe they could have explained that a bit better, I think, in the film, why the hell they called him the Mandarin.
I was actually, it's funny you should mention that, because I did read, like, a while ago that Shane Black did say that, because you were saying before about Mandarin being a stereotype, and Shane Black has gone on record saying that at least the old version of the Mandarin was a race. He did say he was a racist caricature. And what you said before, like, why has he got the sort of the Asian influence if he's not Asian? I actually do have a quote here from Shane Black. got this off Wikipedia. I'll just read this out loud. Shane Black explains that Ben Kingsley's Mandarin is not Chinese in the film, as he is in the comics to avoid the Fu Manchu stereotype. Quoting, "We're not saying he's Chinese. We're saying that he, in fact, draws a cloak around him of Chinese symbols and dragons because it represents his obsessions with Sun Tzu and various ancient arts of warfare that he studied." The filmmakers also cited Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now as an influence on the character. Which you can definitely see why, but at the same time, I don't think it really matters because since the Mandarin isn't really real.
I mean, he kind of really is, matter. But in the way that it's Guy Pearce's Eldridge Killian. I think it's sort of, you know, his... Because when we see him at the end, he's got, like, tattoos and stuff, so you obviously know that there's an influence on him. But it's something that he created that he felt would, you know, be a symbol of terror for people. Like a believable one, I guess. I don't know where I'm going with that.
And it's kind of like a similar type plan like Ozymandias had in Watchmen, you know, like create this front for something else when you're really doing something else behind the scenes as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point too.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I had no problem with it. I actually had a lot of fun with the twist and everything. I just thought it was good. But I guess I don't have an issue with it because I'm not all that familiar with, well, I haven't really read any comics with the character of Mandarin. But I think you have to be able to accept that there are going to be big changes from comic to film. And these are things, I mean, we will definitely discuss this down the track because The Man of Steel will be coming out in a couple of months. But there are a lot of changes they made there that I was sort of like, wait, why are they doing that? But then I kind of, you know, calmed down a bit. And I'm like, why am I getting angry over that? I want a good movie. I don't care about, you know, these little details. And I just think people really need to calm down just a little bit.
I can agree with that. That's just me. We all know how
I feel about fanboys. I have yelled at them many times.
I share similar feelings about fanboys as well. I tell them to shut the fuck up all the time. Anyway.
Yeah, but shut the fuck up.
In terms of, like, because I didn't talk about things, I didn't, any negative aspects of the movie. I think if there was one thing that stops the movie from being a near-perfect five-star comic book movie, I kind of feel like... The villain, like Guy Pearce and the other bad guys' motivations weren't really 100% clear on why they're doing what they're doing. Like, you get a bit of hints here and there, but it's never really 100% clear on why they're doing it or what their plan is. I don't know if you guys felt
No, I don't actually. I did, I mean, despite him having his revenge, I mean, he really wanted to set things up so he could, you know, take over. He had the vice president in place to take over from the president. He wanted control.
Yep.
That's, I mean, he's one of those guys that has those delusions of, you know, being bigger than he is. Yep. And they kind of set up that, you know, what happened, him being let down by Tony Stark kind of led him on that path, which I think he sort of, you know, has that revenge against him personally, but that's just one thing he really wants to be, you know, he wants the world to run the way he wants it, I think. I don't know if Daniel has any feelings on it. He's been quiet for a while.
No, I think there's a little bit of murkiness to it in terms of, you know, the motivation behind the main characters. I mean, it's sort of like, hey, he got by getting stood up by Tony Stark. Then he hooks up with the botanist chick to get this new formula thing for regeneration, which is not perfect. But I didn't get a sense of what, like, why he really took it himself. I mean, I guess he was kind of crippled a little bit at the start of the movie, I think. Wasn't he on crutches or something like that?
Yeah,
yeah, he was. Maybe he tested on himself and it seemed to work with him, and then tested on these soldiers. And most of them end up exploding. <'Cause it doesn't...
laughs> Yeah, which
and to be fair, Guy Pearce is awesome in this movie because his character breathes fire at one point.
I know, I actually thought that was kind of awesome that they really just added such comic bookiness to it. And yeah. I was kind of worried it wouldn't have much of a comic book feel from the trailers, but it really feels like a comic book.
I love Don Cheadle's expression after Guy Pearce breathes fire. It's like, oh, you breathe fire?
Breathe fire? Yeah.
There's a lot of little hilarious moments there. And when you watch this movie, it does feel like Shane Black is definitely all over this film in terms of like the humor, the action, and the way the story's told. And one subplot I actually really enjoyed, and it's a subplot that could easily have been really badly handled, done by anyone else, but I thought the subplot where Tony is in that small town and he has starts a friendship with that kid.
Yeah, that kid is one of the only child actors who is not annoying.
And he's like, he could have easily been annoying, but they sort of write him in a way that he's not annoying, and I thought he was actually pretty, that the actor, Ty Simpkins, who's, I guess a lot of people probably know him from Insidious,
yeah.
And I thought he did a really good job, and he actually has a really good rapport with,
Robert Downey Jr.
And they have some really hilarious moments.
Yeah, like I think that could have been a train wreck, but it actually came off really, really well.
Yeah.
I don't know if Daniel thinks that as well.
No, I think it was really good what they did with the kid, because I think more so he was actually just more of a plot device as a part of Tony Stark's journey. In the first one, you know, he was this obnoxious rich guy who basically, you know, just has a bit of a moment of introspection, realized he's doing some bad stuff and he's going to do good stuff. That was his personal conflict in the first one. The second one was a physical conflict, overcoming, you know, the chance that he was going to die and whatnot. The third one, he really comes full circle, and he actually grows as an individual. And the only conflict that he could overcome was that those personal demons and those fears, which were the result of what happened in Avengers. And the kid really served as a key mechanism to help him overcome those fears. And I think it's almost stereotypical Hollywood where, you know, the kid helps the grown up, really, but it didn't come off feeling so cliched and stereotypical. He really felt like the kid was needed to be there and was the real thing that helped Tony overcome his inner demons. And that it was kind of like almost the demon in the bottle story that was done in the comics, because that was sort of covered a little bit in the second movie, but also in the third one is really about Tony Stark overcoming his personal demons becoming happy and content with himself and who he is. And I think that's sort of reflected in the last scenes of the movie, spoiler alert, where, you know, he has the arc reactor removed from his chest because he no longer needs the shrapnel to protect from the shrapnel entering his heart. So I think, yeah, the kid was really probably one of the best plot devices in the whole movie, and that because it really helped convince the audience that, you know, Tony Stark is changing, and that because I think if you look at Tony Stark in the first two movies, he kind of just looks at kids and goes, oh, yeah, fuck off, kid. And that now he's kind of like, you know, becoming that person that you really want Tony to be, and that just this all-around good guy, and that. So I'm hoping it doesn't lead into, you know, Tony Stark and Pepper Potts having kids and having kid Iron Mans and Iron Man 4.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't go that way, but it's kind of refreshing that the superhero actually feels like his mental health suffers from what he does. I don't think we really see that too much in movies.
And also another thing I liked about the film is like there's a theme that runs through it. And
the Dora the Explorer watch? Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, well, other than that, because that's a plot on its own, but I was talking about like sort of the theme is, and Shane Black sort of mentioned this, is like sort of during the court, because for most part, like Tony Stott.
Oh my God! Really?
Tony Scott, really?
I need to stop picking up that. Tony Stark.
You are a bad man.
Yes. Yeah. You need to find that wah 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 sound effect.
Wah wah wah. Rest in peace, Mr. Tony Scott.
But I was saying is that the Tony does have an arc through the movie because he tries to figure out, is he Iron Man with or without the suit? And I think he feels like he can only be Iron Man with the suit, but during the course of the film, he realizes he doesn't need the suit to be Iron Man because Iron Man is who he is as a person, not the suit. It's like, yeah, the suit gives him his power, but it's Tony Stark's genius and ability to do anything that he can when he sets his mind to it, is what makes him Iron Man as well.
It's because, like, you know, at the end where they're, you know, battling and they actually don't have the suits, that's a really interesting and, you know, good way to kind of say that too.
Yep.
Just talking about some of the continuity issues, The real main one I had was, why the hell didn't he call his suits earlier in the movie? Why is it only, like, at the end for this battle? I mean, that's something that you're kind of thinking, why didn't he do this earlier?
You mean all the suits? Or
yeah,
just one suit?
Like, all the suits. Like, he could just call them. Why didn't he just call them?
Oh, I think Jarvis said, by the way, Paul Bettany does probably his best Jarvis.
He's awesome as Jarvis.
I think I remember because I've seen the movie three times now. So, I think he says because, like, the reason why they couldn't call the suits out is because there was so many debris over the...
So the debris got cleared out and then he could finally call them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. But another one... Oh, sorry, Daniel. Oh,
I think that justifies that massive expose shot of all the workers and the cranes, yeah. And that before the suits come out, it's like, look, we're actually working here to remove the rubble so the suits can come out, just in case you didn't realise.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, the other thing, and this is something Daniel and I had talked about after he saw the movie, he says that the suits are all coded to him. So how come Pepper can wear the suit? But my thinking was that perhaps he had some kind of safeguard specifically for her because he doesn't want anything to happen to her. But he doesn't really give a shit about Rhodes because Rhodes has his own Iron Patriot suit.
Exactly.
But, I mean, that is a bit of an issue that you can't really ignore. You know, it's like, wait, why can she wear it?
And can I also say, Gwyneth Paltrow is such a badass at the very end of this
movie. Yeah, that was kind of awesome. I have a newfound respect
for her. Gwyneth Paltrow and badass in the same sentence.
Yeah, I have a newfound respect for Gwyneth Paltrow. I think people really need to lay off Gwyneth. She's like, I don't know, her and Anne Hathaway are like the most hated people in Hollywood. It's like, well, come fuck down. They're normal people like everyone else. They just happen to have money.
And also, Gwyneth, that last half of the movie.
Yeah, hello, those abs. Jeez, woman.
You know what's funny? My brother commented on those same abs after we were. It's like, jeez, she's worked out. Look at those abs.
I mean, okay. Obviously she has the means to be able to do that, and good on her for doing that.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I've always been a Gwyneth fan. I'm not ashamed to admit that.
Well, getting back to Marcy's point,
yes.
I think where the continuity comes in, really, for me, and the issue is, the whole opening movie, and that establishes that Tony Stark's implanting these devices into his body in order to basically call the bits of the Iron Man suit onto his body. And Gwyneth doesn't have those in her body, so how the hell can she just, like, force grab, you know, the glove to finish off Guy Pearce's character in the end when she doesn't have these bits in her body? And that's where, like, I think it falls down.
He did it so, in her sleep.
Yeah, let's just throw it into the rest of the missing movie pile.
It'll be on the deleted scenes in the Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to go off and film it now, right after hearing this podcast.
They so will.
Indeed.
Because they'll be listening. I'm sending it to Shane Black.
Awesome. Yeah, it's interesting how what I found also across the three movies, the whole concept of the whole arc reactor in Tony's chest is used to power the Iron Man suits, but they never cover how the hell are the other Iron Man suits powered when, you know, like Rhodey doesn't have an arc reactor in his chest and all these other suits and that, where the hell are their arc reactors and that to power them?
They have an arc reactor inside somewhere. I don't know. I'm just talking out of my arse.
I just assumed the big bright light in the middle of their chest was the arc reactors. I just assumed.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe Tony's building in arc reactors into his suits now. But if he's doing that, then it's like, I don't know. Like, they do all this stuff like, sir, your suit is powered down to, like, 5%. It's like, well, doesn't it have an arc reactor in there? Can't his arc reactor power it? It's, I don't know.
They need that. It's just, that's just a plot, because the plot says so kind of things, I think.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, when the Guy Pearce, they steal the, was it the Iron Patriot? They call it the Iron Patriot armor.
The Iron Patriot. Machine. Because War Machine was too violent.
That was awesome.
That was pretty funny.
It tested well with focus groups.
Mom and Pa in Oklahoma. they captured the Iron Patriot suit. They reprogrammed it so, it would transport the president back from Air Force One down to the docks, and that, so, and it, you know, in theory, the bad guys had control of the Iron Patriot armor. Then how is it that Rhodey can just, like, go, oh, give me my armor back, I'm just gonna, you know, use this like nothing ever happened? And I don't know,
because he's James Rhodes, bitch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like when someone's like, well, how can Batman do that? And the answer is because he's Batman. In this case, how can he do that? Because he's James Rhodes, bitch.
Exactly.
Yeah, he just sort of reprogrammed the suit in, like, 10 seconds.
Well, not unless they, like encoded it to James Badger Dale, but Rhodes' encoding was still in the machine.
In Iron Man 2, when, what's his name? Whiplash takes over it, Black Widow reprograms it for Rhodes to have control, but they didn't do anything like that in this, did they? It was just like,
exactly.
I'm taking my suit back, bitch!
That's exactly what my point. Thank you, Marcy. I was just about to bring that up.
I think my explanation worked. Although, can I say, William Sadler as a president is freaking awesome.
Indeed.
That is, like, yes. I was so happy that he was president. We've had, like, some pretty badass presidents lately. We had Aaron Eckhart in Olympus Has Fallen, and William Sadler in this. I mean, come on, man, that's awesome.
Wasn't he the bad guy in Die Hard 2?
Yes.
Oh, enough said then.
Except he doesn't do naked martial arts in this, though.
Although I'd be really disturbed if he did that in this movie.
That would have been hilarious. He's also McGarrett's dad in Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah.
And the other one I wanted to mention, I am such a big fan of James Badger Dale, and I had no idea he was in this movie. So the second he showed up, I wanted to, like, jump up and down because he was in it. I was like, oh my god, it's James Badger Dale! And then it's like, oh my god, he's actually in this movie through, like, the whole way.
And then when you're doing that, I was like, oh my god, I have no idea what you're talking about. Who is this guy?
He's, like, an awesome actor. I first discovered him when he had a guest role on Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And then he went on to star in Season 3 of 24. And he's, like, in a whole bunch of movies, and it's like, oh my god, I love him. Except in The Grey, he was in it for, like, a minute, and I was like, that sucks.
And funny enough, he was only, like, in a minute in a Flight as well. He was, like, literally in that.
He was the cancer patient.
And he was, like, the best part of that movie.
And he was also in Shame, and he was, like, the opposite of Michael Fassbender's character, who hid his shame. James Badger Dale didn't hide his shame.
Exactly.
So there you go.
And also, Marcy, I have to admit, what made me giddy about this movie for, like, 5 seconds, Lyndon Ashby, a.k.a. Johnny Cage.
Yes!
Yes!
I was like, oh my god, it's Johnny Cage!
I was totally like that. I really wanted it to go, okay, let's dance.
I was waiting for Gory to show up.
I'm thinking to myself, it's like, is that Johnny Cage? And I'm like, holy shit, it's Johnny Cage. And I thought to myself, yeah, I know Marcy's going to be like jumping up and down.
I was like squealing. I was looking at the screen and I'm going, oh my god, it's Johnny Cage. Oh my god, oh my god. And then he was gone.
He should have like a larger role in the next Iron Man
movie. Yes.
Just because he's Johnny Cage, bitches.
Yeah, poor Lyndon Ashby is going to be known as Johnny Cage forever. But he is awesome. He should be in more things.
Well, he was in the Teen Wolf TV series.
He was. Wasn't he a sheriff or something?
Yeah, I think he was Styles' dad.
Yeah, I did see some episodes. I haven't watched it properly. Well, I think on the Johnny Cage note, that really brings an end to our podcast.
Oh, one more thing. We forgot the after the scene credit.
Yes, so the whole movie is actually Tony Stark in therapy with his doctor, I forgot his name.
Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner. I was going to say Eric Banner, and I'm like, that's not right.
Oh my god. Don't worry, Marcia, I was like looking for Lyndon, just now I was looking for Lyndon Ashby on IMDb, and I actually just typed in Johnny Cage.
I meant to say Bruce Banner is his psychiatrist for some odd reason.
But he's asleep the entire time and he says, well, Tony, I'm not that kind of doctor.
It was a really funny scene. And it just kind of, you know, brings forth, no, we haven't really forgotten that they're all like friends now. And, you know, he will return in the Avengers too.
Also, one more thing. I forgot about the movie.
Of course you did.
I did like the fact that the movie actually found a good way to explain why Tony Stark didn't call up his S.H.I.E.L.D. mates or the rest of the Avengers, because he was actually wanted everyone to believe that he was dead so he can find out what the Mandarin was up to.
But he doesn't need to call them because Tony Stark wants to work on his own from time to time.
Exactly, because he's Iron Man. He can do whatever he wants. And also, Rebecca Hall.
Real.
As well. Although I did think she was a little underused.
She was way underused. Well, yeah.
She was underused, but I did bet it was shocking that she got killed off halfway through the movie as well.
Yeah, so, but real. I want to add, I don't know about Thor, if any of the Avengers are in it, but in Captain America 2, he actually... Steve Rogers teams up with Black Widow, so they are incorporating that.
He's technically more working for S.H.I.E.L.D. than anything, so it makes sense that she would be there.
Yeah, well. So I think that's an interesting pairing with that. I don't know. I guess we'll see with Thor. We actually get that early as well. It comes out here on Halloween, so that's going to be my birthday movie. What up?
I'm excited for 4. That trailer was fantastic, and you can definitely, because Alan Taylor, who's directed episodes of Game of Thrones, you can see the Game of Thrones influence throughout that entire
trailer.
Can
Joffrey be the bad guy? That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I would smash
Joffrey with his hammer.
With his meow-meow, damn it.
I love Joffrey, but he's a little shithead. That's why I like him, because he's a shithead. And Daniel doesn't know what we're talking about, because he doesn't watch Game of Thrones.
No, I've just started watching Vikings.
That would be cool. I like Vikings.
I think biggest disappointment, Iron Man 3. No AC/DC, damn it.
No. I think they used all the songs already.
I AC/DC and Iron Man together. It's like John Williams' Superman theme and Superman. It's like the same. It's like, what? No AC/DC.
They've used all the songs up.
Well, they used up the entire AC/DC back catalogue.
Greatest hits in Iron Man 2. I know I've got the CD. So I'm like, hey, I can buy some AC/DC now because I don't have all the crap ones.
Indeed, Ed. One more thing, I forgot to
mention. Oh my god, Peter, you're one more thing.
I'm sorry.
Get with it.
Because I was giving
one. We're going to have to school you on the definition of one.
Yes, I know.
No more subsequents come after it.
Yeah, but this is very important, and I was giddy over the fact that this is the last thing, I promise. I was giddy over the fact that the movie takes place around Christmas.
Yes,
so we have a new favorite Christmas movie.
Yes, it's very Shane Black. You could watch it back to back with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You could too.
That'd be awesome.
I think Iron Man needs to set up his house with booby traps.
Kevin McAllister grows up to be Tony Stark.
Actually, you could watch it with Skyfall, Home Alone, because the end is like Home Alone.
Exactly.
Alright,
awesome.
That brings an end to the podcast.
Yeah, B.
I know, but there was so much to say about this movie.
I mean, Bede, you're meant to be hosting it, but apparently I have to take over.
I'll thank everyone for coming on the podcast today. Thank you, Daniel, for stopping by, for being a pretty awesome guest and talking Iron Man 3 with us.
No worries, thank you.
And also Marcy for just being super Marcy, because you're super Marcy.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm going to ask everyone where we can find each other on the internet this week. Marcy, where can we find you on the internet this week?
You can find me in an Iron Man suit. I mean, you can find us at supermarcy.com. And you can follow my Twitter account at twitter.com/supermarcy. And you can find us on our Facebook page by typing in Super Podcast in the search engine, because I can't remember the web address correctly.
Dan, where can we find you on the internet this week?
Where you can find me? Well, you can look me up on Facebook at Dan's Digital Frontier. I also have a website with all my art on there called dansdigitalfrontier.com. And on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/superdan78. So come find me, talk Iron Man, look at some of my art. Maybe you might want to buy some of my art. I have lots of awesome prints.
Indeed. You can also find me breathing fire like Guy Pearce on a daily basis, because, that's just what I do. But also you can find me at Twitter at twitter.com/bejamine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/bejamine, or my Movie Fan Central page at moviefancentral.com/terrastras. And also you can find my weekly writings for supermarcy.com with both my movie song of the week, and also look out for the next few days, because I have not one but two movie reviews popping up for Olympus Has Fallen and The Place Beyond the Pines,
which I'll be looking forward to reading and editing severely. No, I'm just kidding.
But there won't be much, because it's a movie I don't really want to talk too much about, so I won't be saying too much about it.
So it'll just be like 5 pages long instead of 10?
Exactly.
All right.
I would say it's about more 20 out of 50 pages, I should say, Marty.
Yeah. And yes, I guess that wraps us up. I don't know when we'll be back, because that's depending on my health. But we will definitely try to be back soon. But definitely look out for our Superman Spectacular podcast that I'm going to get in a whole bunch of guests, and we're going to talk about Superman and the movie and comics and whatever else we want to talk about that has to do with Superman, because he is the man and he's the reason why I put Super in front of my name, as well as Super Mario Brothers, but I've already talked about them in previous podcasts. So, yeah.
And he's looking pretty tight for a 75-year-old guy.
Well, he looks like Henry Cavill, and, that's all right with me.
That's what happens when your dad's Russell Crowe and Kevin Costner.
That's what happens when both your dads are Robin Hood.
And your mum is Diane Lane. Real. Yeah. I mean, like...
Alrighty, guys.
Cold shower.
Alrighty, guys. That's it. We're going to have cold showers because we're drooling over people in the Man of Steel, apparently. that's a wrap. And until next time, I have been Super, and everyone else has been pretty terrible, except Dan, because apparently he's also Super. And, yeah.
That wasn't a sound effect, by the way. That was just me.
Yeah, that was me. It's not like I've got one of those talking Ted toys. That was actually B. All I have to do is squeeze B's hand, and he talks like that.
Indeed.
Alrighty. That's a wrap. So, yeah, catch you later, guys.
See ya.
Alright. Later.
This podcast was brought to you by the Big Top Network.